Welcome to the Journey Ahead podcast. I'm your host, Hannah Campbell. I'm a childbirth educator, a full spectrum doula, a fierce feminist, and a women's coach. I built Journey Ahead to powerfully prepare and empower families to have incredible experiences through bump, birth, and beyond. Through engaging interviews with leading experts, heartfelt stories from real parents, and evidence-based information, the Journey Ahead podcast covers a wide range of topics, from hypnobirthing, holistic approaches to prenatal care, birth choices, postpartum well-being, parenting techniques, and so much more. By tuning in, you'll gain valuable knowledge, discover different perspectives, and find the guidance you need to make informed decisions that align with your unique desires and values. Whether you're a first-time parent or navigating the journey of parenthood once again, my podcast is a trusted companion on your path to creating a positive and empowered experience for you and your growing family. The journey ahead is long, and I'm right by your side. Hello, and welcome back to the Journey Ahead podcast. I am really looking forward to sharing today's podcast session with you. Mariana is the founder of Empowered Fitness and a brilliant personal trainer for many expectant and new mums. Today, she's incredibly open about her own fitness journey, including navigating pelvic organ prolapse, and as such is a huge advocate for supporting women to look after their pelvic health and bodies in the lead up to, during, pregnancy and beyond. Today, we chat all things empowered fitness, postnatal recovery, including that horrible pressure to snap back, and we get right into the nitty-gritty of pelvic health. Whether you're pregnant, have had a baby, or planning on getting pregnant, you won't want to miss today's episode. So get comfortable and enjoy the podcast. I am joined today by Mariana, who owns Empowered, and Empowered is a brilliant PT and fitness-based business based around the Stockport area. And I'm quite lucky in that I have got to know Mariana via our mutual connections in the birth and kind of postnatal recovery world. And I would love to hear a bit more from you as to your story of how you came to do what you do. I think you and I have got similar backgrounds in that we used to work in media and advertising and all things not related to pregnant people. So it'd be really interesting to hear how you came through that journey to kind of founding your own business.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Hannah. Yeah, so for a long time, late 20s, early 30s, fitness and health was a part of my life. It was a passion, but it wasn't a career. I was working for a digital agency in the Northern Quarter and then got pregnant with my first child. At the start of my maternity leave, I realised very quickly that I didn't want to go back to that world, that I didn't really care about websites. And in a discussion with my husband, he sort of just said, you know, why don't you just go for it, you know, in terms of making your passion a career. So I was like, yes, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to be a personal trainer. I'm going to do my studying whilst I'm on maternity leave, because obviously maternity leave is
because we've got so much time.
This was a few weeks postnatal, maybe coming up to 2 months. And I was very naive about postnatal recovery at that point. I was really keen to get moving. I think I felt I had something to prove because I'd been very active pre-pregnancy. So I very early on went for a run. I went back to playing netball, and I was kind of aware that things down below felt a little bit different, a bit more vulnerable. I just thought, oh, well, it feels different because I've had a baby. And then 10 weeks postnatal, I went to the toilet, stood up, and I thought, no, something feels wrong. Something feels really different. Had a mild panic. Well, a big panic, really. Thought that my womb was coming out of my body. Thought, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to go into hospital. Wow. You know, can't have children anymore. You know, like, went down the whole spiral of fear around what was going on. But to cut a long story short, I developed developed a prolapse.
Right, okay.
Was seen by a GP and referred to a women's health physio, but initially was told, you're not going to be able to go running, you're not going to be able to lift heavy weights. And I was thinking, but I've just decided that I want to be a personal trainer. So it was really hard, both mentally and physically, not knowing what I could do and what I couldn't do. And so I decided that I wanted to seek a women's health physio privately. And it really began my own research. And I started looking into what does it mean to exercise with prolapse? You know, what's helpful, what's not helpful? Because I thought I can't just sit around for 3 months waiting for my NHS referral to come through. And really, that was the start of me still becoming a PT, but deciding to specialise in pre and postnatal. Because ultimately, I couldn't find the person I needed.
Yeah.
So I decided that I wanted to become that person for other women.
Wow, okay. That's fascinating. That must have been really scary, though, going through that process, and particularly not having the services or the support network around you to be able to move through it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there are some amazing women's health physios, but you have to be able to afford that.
Yeah. And
for me, it was a big priority, and it was not just about my physical recovery, it was my mental well-being. But
yeah,
it just added into the mix of, you know, motherhood and that loss of identity, and what can I do, and who am I if I can't do the things that I want to do?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a big unraveling in that sense.
Yeah, and big parts of your identity pre-baby as well, I think. Yeah. We feel that pressure, don't we, to go back to ourselves in some way. So and I think going through motherhood kind of, it breaks you down and helps you build back up into a completely new version of yourself anyway, doesn't it? But to like the threat of potentially losing something that is a big part of you must have been quite scary. So amazing that you've turned that into something really positive and, you know, built a business off the back of it. What would you say like an average day looks like then in terms of when you're working with people?
Well, I guess my business has changed a lot. Obviously, in the midst of everything, I had to then navigate lockdown and taking everything online. But now we're sort of back to in person. My day is a nice mixture, really. So I work one-to-one with some clients, whether that's in postnatal capacity or whether it's just PT, you know, women looking to improve their health and fitness and strength particularly. And then I do mum and baby small group training, which is 3 to 6 mums. I keep the group small because I want to be able to modify the workouts for their own ability and where they are in their recovery. And then I do group classes as well. So that's up to about 12 women. But everything I do, it is low impact, unless it's something like a return to running program,
in which
case we would look to gradually reintroduce impact. But yeah, with the group classes and things, I don't make the mums jump up and down or run around, do crunches. I don't do anything that could negatively impact postnatal recovery.
Right.
And yeah, it's great. I get to work with a lot of women now, some online, but most are in person now. So it's a nice sort of mixture. And then I get to cuddle babies.
Well, yeah, that's the main reason why I do what I do.
So that's fun. You know, hopefully they don't need too much attention. Because the classes are for the mums, they're not for the babies. So I just do what I can in order for the mums to get the most out of those times with me.
Yeah, which is definitely something that my eyes have been open to, having had my own children. Is I always thought before I had babies, like, how do you work out? Because you can't take the babies with you. You can't like rock up with a pushchair in the middle of a commercial gym. But I guess that's why people like yourself are so important, because it's not only exercise, it's not only having your baby's with you, but it's also that sense of community from other people that are going through the same thing, you know, or at the same point in their lives, I guess.
Yeah, there's always a lot of chat between workouts.
Yeah, not necessarily good chat, I guess, cause when you've got one person who's baby sleeping through and then the rest feel like they're doing something wrong. So if you were to just talk through how people can support themselves safely, do you think there's like common mistakes that people make, or, you know, common things that people do post or pre, I guess, prenatally or postnatally that can impact their recovery after they've had their babies?
Yes. So I think in pregnancy, it's tricky because there's been a lot of misconception or misinformation or just lack of information about exercising during pregnancy. But exercise is beneficial for both you and your baby in pregnancy. And so looking for a trainer who is pre and postnatally qualified, because you would want to adjust workouts the further you get along into the second and third trimester. And it's things like not, you know, avoiding certain core movements, just the practicality of working around a bump, again being mindful of impact and how much pressure you're putting through your pelvic floor, and then thinking about preparing for labor, and being strong enough and fit enough to get through possibly a long labor, also knowing how to really like relax and open muscles, because it's not all about having a really strong pelvic floor. You want to be able to sort of relax and open your floor as well, and that can really set you up for an easier postnatal recovery. It's absolutely no guarantee, because every pregnancy, every labor and every recovery is different, and I think particularly postnatally, that's when mums feel the pressure to bounce back, or feel like, oh well, the baby's out now, I should be back to normal, whatever normal is. And I think the big misconception there is that, you know, you have your 6 weeks check and that's it, you're good to go, you're back to normal, you're fully healed, when you really aren't. You're absolutely still healing at that point, and it can take 1 to 2 years to fully recover, depending on, you know, type of labor you had and delivery, and also factors like breastfeeding can affect exercise and joints and ligaments and things like that. So it's having grace and time and patience, and it can feel frustrating when you just want to feel like yourself again, but taking things slower, really allowing yourself to really rest and recover those first few weeks, and then I always say you want to sort of rebuild from the inside out, so focus on your core and pelvic floor, build a strong foundation, and then build from there, slowly increase impact. I mean, in terms of running, the physio guidelines for that are to wait till actually around 12 weeks before running, but a lot of women run before that, and a lot of women a year later might not feel ready. So I think it's knowing what the guidelines are in returning to exercise, but also realizing that they are guidelines, not rules, and you have to be mindful and just pay attention to how you're feeling and what's going on in your body, and try not to fall into the trap of comparing your recovery with someone else's, because what so and so can do might not be helpful for you. So again, if you are going to the gym or something like that, it's trying to find someone who is postnatally certified, who's not going to put pressure on you to just get straight back into a HIIT class and jump up and down, because unfortunately that's when issues can come up, so you want to protect yourself from those.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because I always thought, so in my past I've had disordered eating and really probably quite negative relationship with exercise, in terms of like over exercising and getting obsessed with it and stuff. So I always thought having children would make me potentially fall back into that pattern, but actually it's bizarre how I think we forget how many hormonal changes we go through during pregnancy and post baby. And actually, I would say my relationship with my body, even though I'm bigger than I've ever been, is probably better than it ever has been. But largely because I've not really felt that pressure to, you know, it's that old adage, isn't it? Like, get back in my pre-baby jeans. I just threw them away and was like, when I feel ready to wear jeans again, I'll wear jeans that fit the body that I've got right now. And I guess it's moving away from that pressure. And I don't think social media helps with that, does it? And I try and talk to the moms that I work with about that as well. You know, when you're in that fourth trimester period and you see people attending baby classes or exercise classes or out socializing with everybody, you might not feel ready to do that yet. And it's accepting that you're on your own individual journey, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah. And I would always, especially with my group classes, which people can attend from 6 weeks postnatal, and never market that as, oh, come and lose the baby weight.
But yeah.
It's really about that. It's about rebuilding and recovering. It's almost like a bridge of rehab back into fitness. So my goal is that you leave there feeling stronger, that your core's improved, like your pelvic floor's improved. And that from there you could then go on and do other types of exercise. But despite that, I still get a lot of women coming because they feel that pressure to exercise in order to lose weight. But it's really not about that. You know, what you do outside of that session is going to be more to do with weight loss and things like that. And for some of those women, if they come to me very early postnatal and that's their goal, I'm not going to turn them away, but I will dig in a little bit more of like, why are you wanting to do that? Because you don't need to add in another layer of pressure. You know, when you're sleep deprived, caring for a tiny baby, actually, is there something that's more beneficial for you now in this season? And yes, you know, there's nothing wrong with having like a weight loss goal. But that can take away from the season you're in. So it's just, I try to work with them of like, okay, let's take the steps now that will lead to that in the future. But I don't want that to be the focus right now.
I love that. And I think particularly from my own personal experiences, I'm working with a PT at the moment. And it's very much the conversations we've had is like, I want functional fitness. So I want to be able to like run around after two boys who are under 5 years old and not be wheezing at the side of the pitch because I can't breathe, or I want to be able to like lift up my 13 kilogram 11 month old because he's an absolute giant and carry him up the stairs without feeling like my back's going to break in two. And it's those things that I guess we take for granted when we're, you know, perhaps when we're younger and fitter and we don't have children. It's those things that actually need focus because they're the like foundations, aren't they, of a strong body.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, when you are dealing with this, like stasis recti, like that abdominal separation or pelvic organ prolapse, it can feel that you can sort of feel almost a bit of anger or resentment, or you just don't feel like you know your own body anymore. And I think if you're dealing with those, it's important to improve and work on those as much as you can, so that you can, like you say, live a functional whole life. So in terms of my prolapse, you know, going from that point of being told, oh no, never going to run, never going to do heavy things, well, since then I've had a second child, and obviously this time around I was much more educated and aware, took my time, rebuilt that core, and then I did the couch to 5k, so I can happily run 5k now with no issues. I'm back to deadlifting my own body weight, and the goal is like to aim for 100 kg. I'm doing pull-ups, which I've never done before. So there's things like, it can feel at the time when you're dealing with those postnatal issues that it's a bit of a, you know, like a like there's a brokenness or there's something wrong with you, and there is like a glimmer of truth in that, like that something needs repair and it needs attention, but it doesn't have to be a life limiting thing that you live with. You can absolutely improve those things with, you know, working with physio and working doing exercise, and actually, yeah, I'm probably now stronger and more consistent in my exercise than I ever have been. And I'm really passionate that if you are dealing with things like incontinence or, you know, back pain because you've got no core muscles, or it feels like you've got no core muscles, that you take the time to address those things and make them a priority, because that it is a form of self-care, but it's not selfish in that sense. It's, you know, you being able to live a full and happy life will impact the lives of your children. And I'm sure you would do everything, like if your child had an issue, you would do everything you could to get them the help and support they need. So I think I just like to bang the drum of like, ladies, don't live with leaks and issues. Help out there. And if you have had a diagnosis of prolapse or something like that, that is definitely not the end for you in terms of your health and fitness. It just looks like a different road to take, and maybe a longer process, but there is, you know, absolutely light at the end of the tunnel, and you're capable of doing more than you can imagine.
And how amazing that you've got that kind of first hand experience as well, because you're able to support people through that, having been in their shoes and know how it feels mentally, rather than just understanding the mechanics of how to repair it physically.
Yeah, it's tough. Motherhood can be tough.
Yeah, it challenges us in ways we never expected.
Sure.
So I'd love to chat to you a bit more about pelvic health, because I know this is something that you're really passionate about. And you've obviously shared a lot about your own personal experience. So is there things that pregnant people and people postnatally can be doing? And what does that look like? How does it look different? So when you're pregnant, how can we be looking after our pelvic health versus after we've had a baby, given that our kind of pelvic floor is doing two different jobs in those instances, isn't it? You know, when we're pregnant, it's holding a baby in and supporting our bladder and our bowels, etc. And then it's been stretched and kind of had all of the hard work of at least 9 months of pregnancy on top of it after we've had our baby. So what can we be doing to look after ourselves in both those seasons?
Well, I think in pregnancy, obviously, you're dealing with a lot of additional pressure on your bladder. So, you know, we make a joke of it that, you know, every 5 minutes you're going for a wee, going for a wee, or these heads on my bladder. Like, so when it comes to exercise and things like that, I think it, again, it can be quite easy, especially on social media, to judge what other people are doing. And women get it all the time. If they post a picture of themselves with a bump in the gym, you'll get some people saying, "That's amazing, go for it, girl," you know, and then other people saying, "Oh, you're hurting your baby, don't do that." So when it comes to impact and running and things like that, in terms of protecting your pelvic floor, ultimately you get to decide what you feel comfortable with. The question to ask yourself around impact and high intensity exercise in pregnancy is that risk versus reward factor. So if I want to like train for a marathon in pregnancy, and it's like, well, if I feel good, I could, but what's the risk of that? And is there another way for me to exercise that isn't going to put loads of additional pressure through my pelvic floor? So for me, I limited impact once I got into that sort of later second trimester, because I didn't want to push my pelvic floor to the limit. For me, that wasn't a good enough reason. I'm not like a professional athlete or anything like that. So it's paying attention to what you're doing in terms of additional pressure, additional impact, and why you're doing that. And is there another way for you to get benefits of exercise without doing that? And then also practicing pelvic floor exercises. So there's a big focus normally on what people call Kegels, which is basically pelvic floor contractions. You know, when you relax the pelvic floor and then you lift up and contract the pelvic floor. But alongside those, things like squats, lunges, glute bridges, they all contribute to your pelvic floor health and strength. So it's looking at a more holistic view of pelvic floor exercises. When it comes to doing Kegels, I'll call it that just because it's shorter to say. there's two parts. So I think we get very focused on, oh, I must have a strong pelvic floor. So we really focus on the contraction and lifting up and, you know, trying to stop a wee, that kind of lift. But the other half of it is the relaxation. And in order to get a really good contraction, you want to be able to fully contract, but fully release and relax. So in terms of my prolapse, it wasn't to do with an issue of pelvic floor strength. I had a strong pelvic floor. My problem was that I couldn't relax it. So I held a lot of tension there. So stress can be a factor. And especially if you're someone who sort of tends to brace their tummy. Because you know, when we're taught growing up, like, oh, you pull your tummy in, you know, stand up straight. You don't want to show that you've actually got like a normal belly. So you're always pulling yourself in. And once I became aware of this, I realized that I used to do it when I was driving, like I was pulling in my tummy. And then later when I was feeding, I realized I used to pull in my tummy. And so I was holding all this tension there. So it was about not when I first worked with a physio, it was, she didn't actually set me exercises in that sense. She sent, gave me breathing techniques and relaxation techniques. So it's taking the time to engage with that part of your body. I don't think we really do it before pregnancy, because why would we never talk about it?
Yeah.
So it's learning to do a good pelvic floor contraction, but learning how to fully release and relax the pelvic floor, and doing that in different positions. And then when you get closer to labor, you would focus more on that relaxation part of the pelvic floor.
Okay.
When it comes to postnatally, you'll probably see your midwife and she'll say, you know, when you're like 2 weeks postpartum, like, oh, do your pelvic floor exercises? And you nod and you think, no way am I doing that. I am bruised. I'm broken. Like, I don't want to squeeze anything down there. I'm not ready for that.
I also just felt like I couldn't feel mine for the first like 3 weeks. I just wasn't even like, I would do the things that you could normally do to tense it. And it was like, it just did nothing.
Yeah. I'd say, you know, for those first couple of weeks, you're just in a different world, aren't you? So
yeah.
I think you can do some breathing exercises. So I would do some core breathing, but I wouldn't really focus on pelvic floor contractions at that point, just because I was bruised and you know popping ibuprofen all day long. But then once you do feel like things have calmed down a little bit, then at that point you'd start to bring in some pelvic floor exercises along with core breathing, and core and pelvic floor, it's all part of the same puzzle, really, pieces of the same puzzle. So you want those core elements to work together with your pelvic floor. So for those first like 6 weeks, it's not like that you wait for 6 weeks and then suddenly bing, everything's good, off you go. You can start some things before that, focusing on core breathing, pelvic floor exercises, and then slowly build up from that point. But again, it's learning not just to contract but being able to release, and obviously there might be other issues going on in terms of your bladder function. One key thing I'd say in terms of pelvic floor health is constipation, because you deal with that both in pregnancy and postnatally, and it's really not great because it forces you into that bearing down position. So one of the best things that I bought myself, I nicked it from my toddler at the time, was a step to put at the toilet, so I could lift up my feet and then you're in more of a squat position and then you're just able to go far easier. Excuse me. So it's making sure you're well hydrated, having plenty of fiber, just learning to relax and release, and then bringing your feet up so you're more of in a squat position. If you can avoid that constipation, then you're going to avoid potential issues, or again, avoid putting extra pressure through that pelvic floor.
Yeah, particularly if you end up on antibiotics or iron tablets postnatally as well, because those two things together are just a recipe for congestion, shall we say. So do you have any opinions on like the tools that you can buy? So like the LV egg that you can use, and then there's some others, isn't there? Do you have any opinion on whether you think they're worthwhile and people investing in or?
So I guess the key is that they are an investment. So the way that they work is that they give you biofeedback in terms of how well you're doing your pelvic floor contractions. So if you're not going to be able to see a women's health physio who would do an internal exam, in that sense it can be useful if you feel like you're really struggling to contract the pelvic floor, or you feel like, am I doing this right, I'm not sure. So that is a good way to check. You can do it yourself, you know, with fingers, feeling for how the muscles sort of wrap around your fingers, but obviously it's pretty awkward and everything's going to feel a bit different down there anyway, so yeah. You don't want to like freak yourself out. But yeah, so if you see a women's health physio, they would do an internal examination and they would see how you're contracting the pelvic floor, how you're releasing. Sometimes they have their own machine, so they don't need to do internal examination with fingers. They would use their own like biofeedback machine.
Okay. In order
to get a clear reading. So for me, having a visual up to what I was doing internally was quite helpful.
Like, yeah,
literally a visual graph of me doing the contraction, showing the peak on the graph, and then the release. So they have some women health physios, they have these special seats as well called like Pelvi Power, so they don't require any internal device, you just sit on them. They're like an uncomfortable bike seat, and again, okay, they can give you feedback in terms of how you're doing your pelvic floor. So if you find the idea of something internally not great for you for whatever reason, then if you find one of the physios who have these chairs, you can like book sessions on these chairs.
Wow, okay.
And I mean, I found it quite fun because on one of them you have to, it's like a challenge where you have to follow the line with your contraction, you know, like, and it gives you,
yeah,
like, okay, I'm just going to go halfway and then down and then all the way up and down.
So yeah,
I was just like, oh, this gives me a real fun challenge.
Yeah, I think that gamification of it makes you more likely to do it as well. I invested in the LV after my first baby, and it is literally like, it's not Pac-Man, but it's like Pac-Man. You know, you've got to like hit, you've got a little ball and you've got to hit the different coloured hoops, which it makes it a bit more interesting, but it's just finding the time and, like you say, making it a priority, because when it's something that we're not used to doing pre-baby and then we have a whole load more responsibilities after baby arrives, it's hard to like force yourself to do it, I think, sometimes.
And there is the free app, the NHS app, the Squeezy app, which is basically just a notifications reminder.
Right, okay.
It'll give you a little bit of, it will give you some guidance in terms of how many contractions or releases to do and when. But it can, the danger with notifications is that they just become one of many notifications that feels overwhelming on your phone. So when I'm talking to new mums, I say, if that doesn't feel helpful, then try habit stacking instead. Okay. So a habit that you're already doing, whether that's feeding baby, boiling the kettle, brushing your teeth, make that the trigger for when you do your pelvic floor exercises, so you're not having to do something again, remember something again at a separate time. Just tag it on to something that is already a part of your day. That can be more useful than trying to remember something else.
Amazing. That's a good idea. I've not thought of that before, but you can see how you would easily fit it into your daily life. You could even have like a little post-it reminder, couldn't you, next to the kettle?
Yeah, just think about how you're motivated and how you're prompted. If you're a visual person, then something like that. Right.
Brilliant. So what are the signs that someone has good pelvic health, particularly postnatally? Like, what should we, I know you'd mentioned your personal experience, you thought, oh, well, it's just, things are just feeling different because I've just had a baby. But then you got to the point where you were like, okay, no, something's really wrong. Is there is there signs in between now that you're obviously more educated as to what in quote unquote normal is? Do you know like specific signs as to when perhaps something's not quite right?
Yeah, so I think the obvious one and that people are more aware of is if you're dealing with any kind of incontinence, so whether that's urine or the other or wind, if you're finding you're really struggling to control that, then obviously that's an issue and a reason to go and get things checked out. Similarly, some women might feel the urge to go, but then when they try to go, they can't. So again, that would be like an indication of something's not quite right.
Okay.
For me, I initially didn't have any issues with incontinence, so I thought I was kind of good to go. But the red flags now was almost, it's hard to describe, but it was almost like a feeling of vulnerability down there. Okay. Or like a more like being very aware of it. And then what that progressed into was like a heaviness or a feeling of dragging. And for that moment, you know, when I went to the toilet and stood back up, it felt like I'd put a tampon in and it slipped.
Right, okay,
and,
yeah.
And it was like, oh, something was there. And I'd recently had the coil put in. So my first thought was the coil has somehow slipped down because I can feel something. And then when I actually, so I took a look, you know, I got a mirror and took a look, and there was like a bulge of tissue essentially,
right, okay,
where there didn't used to be.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about pelvic organ prolapse, we're talking about different organs that just descend,
okay,
lower than they should be. So a mild prolapse, it would just be descended inside. Then when it's getting more severe, it might be descended into the entrance of your womb or something. And then you get really severe was when things do actually protrude beyond the body.
Wow, okay.
So if that's happened, then you know something's gone really wrong. But it's being mindful of, yeah, your bladder function and bowel functions, any feeling of heaviness or dragging. Obviously, if you've got any pain around that area, so sometimes it could be how your episiotomy is healing that can impact it, or if something's not being stitched up quite right or in the best way that it could have been. And I will say pelvic health, it's not just for those women who've had a vaginal birth. It, you know, even with C-section, obviously the baby's not passing through that zone, but you've still had that pressure on the pelvic floor the whole time. So it's not that a C-section guarantees you no pelvic health issues.
Wow, okay. Well, this has been really, really fascinating. I think it's really interesting because I think, you know, 2 weeks postnatally, a lot of the things you've described, a lot of people would feel and get told is normal. So I guess it's beyond that 2 week, 2-3 week period afterwards if stuff like that is prolonging and is hanging around for a long period of time, then I guess it's a sign that something is a bit untoward. So what is the experience of going to see a pelvic health physio like? I know you'd mentioned that, you know, there's some that have seats, there's some that do internal examinations and things like that, but what are they looking for? What can people expect when they go to that type of appointment? And then I guess if someone has gone to that type of appointment and has received news that they need to do work, where do they begin? Where do they start?
So if in terms of seeing a women's health physio, it's good to look for one that offers mummy MOTs. Now, they're what I would love all women to have postnatally, but that's a detailed check in terms of how you're recovering. So yes, they'll look at things like posture, they'll assess for diastasis recti, you know, looking for those abdominal separations. If you're happy, they'll do an internal examination and feel for your pelvic floor strength. And if you've got concern or worried about prolapse, that they'll have a feel for that as well and assess what prolapse, what type of prolapse it is and what the grade is. And then they'll also just look at, you know, if you've got a C-section scar, they'll look at how that's healing as well. So they're kind of like the main areas. Now, the follow-up from that depends. Some of them will just tell you what they're seeing and feeling. Others will give you a bit more of a report and they might give you some exercises to do. In terms of the outcomes of that, you might feel like, yeah, I'm good to go. I can just go on to like a postnatal fitness class and I'll be fine. If they do highlight issues, whether that's pelvic floor issues or diastasis issues, then they will probably offer some kind of follow-up with them at their practice. Or if, depending on the severity of it, that might be something that you can work with someone like me who's pre and postnatally trained, who I have had that before where physio has sort of delivered a report and then I've built their recommendations into a specific workout program for woman. If there's something that comes out of that initial assessment, they advise follow-up but you don't have the funds, that would be when you go to your GP and you start making a lot of noise requesting that referral. The referrals will differ depending on your location. Annoyingly, it's one of those things that women quite often have to advocate for. You might just be told, oh, you've had a baby, wait 6 months, you know, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But if it's affecting your quality of life, if it's affecting your mental health, then don't accept that. Push, like make noise, cry, scream, whatever you need to do. Get that referral.
We in the reception area. Yeah. Whatever you need to do that'll get your attention.
Yeah. So that would be my advice. But I understand, again, the MOT is not necessarily available for everyone, but there are good providers of the mummy MOT around this area. And so if for example, someone came to my class and flagged an issue they were having, then I've got people that I will refer out to. And I always do a postnatal consultation with my mums in terms of, even if they're just doing like a class, they'll have to complete a questionnaire, because that's a good way of just catching potential issues, modifying workouts for them if they need to be modified, and just making sure that they get the help that they need and they're not living with something that they don't need to live with.
Yeah, and I guess from what you've said today as well, it's that understanding that just because that's where you are now doesn't mean that's like a sentence that you have forever. It's just giving yourself the time and the understanding that slowly you'll get to a place where you're either where you were previously or things are feeling even better than they were previously. But it just takes patience and I guess a bit of kindness to yourself to not like rush back and expect too much of yourself.
Yeah, and there is time is a factor as well. So although I'm saying if a GP says wait 6 months, don't wait 6 months, that there is some truth in that over time your body will continue to change. And again, if you're breastfeeding, you've still got that relaxing hormone in your system. So for some women, once they stop breastfeeding, things kind of tighten up a little bit more. And so there might be some symptoms that you're dealing with now that you might not have in the future. But it's important of during those, you know, whether it's the first year or the first 2 years, that you're not putting loads of pressure or impact through your body whilst it's still healing.
Okay, and then I guess my last question for you today, just based on obviously the women that I work with, do you find that after things like instrumental delivery or augmented labor, you know, where perhaps people have had The syncytosin on, I'll put my teeth back in, syncytosin on drip, that, you know, has perhaps created more intense uterine contractions or has like sped up labor that perhaps would have unfolded slowly had they not had that augmentation. Do you find that you get a lot of people that have gone through that experience that are having kind of more intense challenges? I guess logically it would make sense that they would, given that they've often had much more interaction down there than they normally would.
Well, it can be a little bit of a minefield, and I think with prolapse, I can understand the need to try and point the finger at this is why this happened to me, or and also it can be really easy to feel guilty that, you know, because I went for a run and I went back to netball too soon, you know, I can feel like I did this to myself. But
yeah,
but actually I did what I did with the information I had at the time.
Yeah.
And it's not my fault that I didn't know the flags and that I couldn't read the information that my body was giving me. So I will say, you know, it can be easy to want to point the finger at something or to take that blame onto ourselves, but we need to not do that and try and let that go and just be like, okay, this is where I am now. How can I educate myself and move forward? But in terms of like labour and delivery, I don't know so much about like the drip factor, put it that way. But if you have had a very long labour, and for me, I was definitely just really pushing hard, you know, whether I had a contraction or not, I was just like pushing, you know.
Right, okay, like, yeah.
You know, I'd had a very, very long labour with Jesse. You know, I tried the pull, got in the pull, I was like, nope, it's not going to cut it for me. I'm gonna do so I think I laboured for a long time, I pushed for a long time, so that can impact it. Forceps is one where you see a forceps delivery. There is a higher chance of prolapse after forceps. But then again, I had bladder issues after my epidural, so I lost bladder function.
Okay, yeah.
And was basically full of wee. Like I had to drain out about 2 liters because I just hadn't been going and couldn't feel the urge to go. So I had to kind of get that back before I could leave the hospital. So that's another factor in terms of like if you've had any kind of epidural, sometimes your bladder function takes a while to recover. So, and what happens from the epidural to when you get that bladder function back, that kind of impact things.
Yeah, I have seen that with a couple of mums actually that have had their labours have progressed in such a way where they've ended up with forceps, and one of them actually got sent home for 7 days with a catheter in because she wasn't feeling that urge. So yeah, I think it's one of those things, isn't it, when we have any kind of instruments down there, it's putting additional strain on our entire tissue structures and everything. So it would make sense that it's important even more so for those people that have had those experiences to keep an eye on how they're doing. And it's difficult as well, isn't it? Because I would imagine things feel even less normal down there when we've had large amounts of stitching or we've had any instruments kind of interacting with us down there.
Yeah, and obviously it's hard as well if you've got other children, but trying to really rest those first few weeks will set you up. Although it feels like you're doing nothing and you're just lying, you know, that rest period is investing in your recovery down the line. So
absolutely,
not feeling that need to, I should really get up and put a wash on right now, or I'll make that person a cup of tea. It's like, no, don't do that. Take all the help and support that you can get. Try not to move and just rest and recover those first few weeks.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, isn't it? I always talk to parents about creating a postnatal plan because we do so much preparation for when baby arrives, but then very few of us actually sit down and put a plan together with our partners. If we've got a partner with us, as to how we're going to recover in that period and how we're going to look after ourselves and what we're going to eat. And, you know, basic things like you said before about keeping well hydrated and making sure you've got enough fiber. Obviously having meals in the freezer, in the fridge is great, but have you got stuff to go with them that's going to sustain you? It's all of that basic stuff that we take for granted, but when there's little humans around, particularly when there's more than one, it's hard to kind of prioritize those things, isn't it? And you just kind of get away with eating dry toast or leftovers from the children's dinner and stuff, and we are conditioned, I think, to put ourselves at the bottom of the pile. So it's putting that, shifting the balance and putting ourselves towards the top, because when we look after ourselves and we invest in our own recovery, then everybody else benefits, don't they?
Yeah, and I think, and if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I didn't do that, I did everything wrong, and now I'm dealing with all these issues, like, it's not your fault.
No,
you know, you at the time you do what you think you need to do, you do what you need to survive. So I think it's just, you want to stay away from that guilt and blame.
Yeah. I get a lot of that with people postnatally, talking about their labour experience. But unfortunately, and I could rant about this for a long time, but we live in a society that doesn't really prioritise women's health. It doesn't really prioritise choices for women, even the labour experience. You know, they want us in and out as quickly as possible. And a lot of the intervention that's suggested is to speed things up so that you're in and out, you know, you're on that conveyor belt and you've passed. And it's the same thing you were talking about before, about the fact that we don't understand a lot about our pelvic health because it's not taught to us. It's not talked, you know, we'll have 15 classes when we're 13 or 14 years old about how the minute we have sex, we could get pregnant. But at no point do they talk to us about one of our major network of muscles that has an impact on our quality of life. So I think it's amazing that there's people like you that are supporting people and talking about your own experiences, because I guess the more we talk about it and the more we let people know that there is choices and there's things that they can do to put themselves in a good position, then the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'll let you go so you can enjoy the rest of your weekend, but I just really want to say thank you for your time today. And it's been really interesting to get to know more about what you do and, you know, being able to speak to that, to expectant parents about the work that you do is really interesting as well.
Great. No, thanks so much for having me.
Cheers, Mariana. I'll catch you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Journey Ahead podcast, the podcast designed to empower, guide, and support you through your parenting journey. Please do check out the show notes for all information that was referred to today. Also, if you've got a second, I'd love it if you could drop me a review. It really helps others discover the podcast. Thank you for sharing your time with me today, and I hope you found today's pod interesting and useful. I'll see you again soon. The journey ahead is long, and I'm right by your side.